heat index values reaching 110 degrees in many locations. After that, the front will sag southward into the Ohio River Valley, allowing slightly cooler and less humid air to filter in from the north tomorrow. High temperatures today will range from the upper 70s across north-central Wisconsin to the low 100s across western Missouri, with heat index readings up to 115 degrees in central Missouri. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-60s in Iowa and western Kentucky to the upper 70s in central Missouri. The forecast for east-central Illinois, a heat advisory, remains in effect until 7 o'clock this evening. This afternoon, sunny, hot, and humid. Look for a high in the mid to upper 90s and heat index readings ranging from 100 to 110. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low 72. The wind out of the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and cooler with a high of 85 and a north wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 64. The wind will be from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 80s and a light east wind. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Expect a low in the low 70s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 80s to the mid 90s. In Rockford and the Chicago metropolitan area, skies were cloudy. Northern Indiana locations also reporting cloudy skies. Elsewhere, sunshine was reported. At Rockford, 88 degrees at the top of the hour. It was 87 at O'Hare. Bloomington reported 91. Springfield, 94. Mattoon, 88. Carbondale, 93. At South Bend, 87. 88 at Terre Haute. Indianapolis reported 90 degrees. And Lafayette, 91. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 88, the dew point 75, giving us a heat index of 97, the relative humidity 65%, the wind out of the south at 8, the barometric pressure 29.90, and falling. Supercomputers have become a critical tool for scientists. Each year they get bigger and faster, and they use a lot more power. This has researchers looking to reinvent the supercomputer. Lauren Summer of member station KQED has more.
Meet the Cray 1.
If you needed an icon for a supercomputer, you would use the Cray 1.
This 6-foot-tall tower of wires was the most powerful supercomputer the world had ever seen in 1976. Today, it's part of the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley, where Dag Spicer is a senior curator.
It blew people's minds. It was so powerful, so fast.
Of course, in today's terms,
it's roughly equivalent to a first-generation iPhone from Apple.
The reason we don't play Angry Birds on a supercomputer today is thanks to something called Moore's Law.
Moore's Law is a prediction made by Intel co-founder Gordon Moore in 1965 that the number of transistors incorporated in a chip will double approximately every 12 months.
What that means is computer chips have gotten smaller and faster at an incredible rate over the last five decades, which leads us to...
This is our new Cray XE6 supercomputing system.
Also known as Hopper, the nickname that's used by computer scientist John Shelf and his colleagues at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And right now, it's chewing on some complicated problems.
Particle accelerator design, we have fusion energy, and then we also have a laser plasma inertial fusion simulation.
Okay, some very complicated problems. It's as powerful as 10,000 desktop computers. But in just a few years, Berkeley Lab will get a new model that's as powerful as 100,000 desktops. According to Moore's Law, that next generation supercomputer should be smaller. But
the problem is that now we can't make them go any faster.
Shelf says computer chips have hit a wall.
So we can cram more things in the chip, but if you make them go fast, it's so hot they'll melt.
If chips themselves aren't faster, supercomputers will simply have to add more and more of them to increase computing power, which means much more energy use. Hopper uses around 3 megawatts of electricity, about as much as 2,000 homes.
Projections say that at the end of the decade, we'd be at 100 megawatts if we continue.
That's enough power for a small city. The electricity bill alone would be roughly $100 million a year.
What that says is that our current approach to doing supercomputing is a dead end, and that we need to think of dramatically new ways to improve the efficiency of computing.
Shelf says that could be done with some very familiar technology.
Hello?
Cell phones have computer chips that are designed to be energy efficient, so your phone lasts longer on a charge. Shelf says, why not build a supercomputer with chips that combine millions of these small cell phone processors?
In using that approach, we're able to demonstrate an additional 80 times more energy efficiency than business as usual.
Which would mean a much more practical supercomputer. Whether or not it gets built depends on companies like Intel, who would design the chips. Shelf says Berkeley Lab hopes to use this cell phone-inspired computer to model some of the trickier effects of climate change, like rainfall patterns, ice sheet melt, and the effects of clouds.
It enables policymakers to have the tools they need to make important decisions that have trillion-dollar consequences.
That way, Shelf says, supercomputers could work on tomorrow's climate and energy challenges without contributing to the very problem they're trying to solve. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Sommer in San Francisco.
George Pelicanos is a writer. He wrote for the television show The Wire, set in Baltimore. He's now writing for the TV series Tremé. That program is set in New Orleans. All 17 of his crime novels have been set in his hometown, Washington, D.C., but he isn't writing about politicians, lawyers, or lobbyists. Esquire has called Pelicanos the poet laureate of the D.C. crime world, and it's a fitting description. When Pelicanos writes about crime in the district, he's also writing about race and class in the city. NPR's Elizabeth Blair recently cruised the streets of D.C. with the author. A note to listeners, the story contains some offensive language.
When George Pelicanos writes about crime in D.C., he's also writing about race and class. He says it all started when he was 11 years old. He was working at his dad's coffee shop downtown. To get there, he'd take the bus from his home in a Maryland suburb. It was the summer of 1968. Martin Luther King Jr. had recently been assassinated, and there'd been rioting in the streets.
I was on the bus going down 7th Street, which had just burned down two months earlier, and then seeing the people on the bus, they were acting differently than they had before. They were dressing much more boldly, and I remember the women wearing these big earrings, said black is beautiful on them, and they had silhouettes of women with afros. And then I'd get to work, and the counter was there, and my dad and I, Greek Americans, and an all-black crew on one side of the counter, and on the other side was white professionals, because it was 1968. And, the counter was a dividing line. I knew it. And I've been writing about race and class my whole career. I mean, that's where it all comes from. It comes from that summer, pretty much.
D.C. was a powder keg back then, says Pelicanos, with the tension between the white police and the black residents. That's partly why he made one of his most important characters, Derek Strange, one of D.C.'s first black cops. In one scene, a black crowd gathers in front of a drugstore in a blighted part of the city. They're throwing rocks and bottles. Derek Strange and his white partner were called to the scene.
Strange and Troy joined the police line in front of the store and spread out several arm lengths, but remained side by side.
This is from the audiobook of the novel Hard Revolution.
From what Strange could see, he was the sole black officer on the scene. He heard screams of Tom and House Nigger and felt a pounding in his head. He brandished his stick and slapped it rhythmically into his palm. He did not look the crowd members in their eyes. Serve and protect. Do your job.
There were also white cops who didn't like blacks being hired. For his research, Pelicanos interviewed former D.C. police officers. One told him some white officers out and out quit.
They weren't going to work with black officers. These are guys that he said were, he didn't even know they were like that, but they just, when it started happening, they said, I'm done, this isn't going to work for me.
The street crimes of a George Pelicanos novel can be brutal, and oftentimes there's more than one unfolding in the same book. Neighborhood murders, drug lords, prostitutes, hate crimes. Even the good guys get ugly.
I'm not really interested in writing books about racists. I think much more interesting is people that don't think that they have any kind of those bad feelings inside of them and they deny it.
Pelicanos makes all of them vivid. He tells you what car they drive and what music they listen to. With the greasers, it might be Springsteen or a rocker named Link Ray. With Detective Derek Strange, it's the soundtracks to westerns and classic soul.
Oh, I look like I'm down in my luck. Peace and faith.
Derek Strange was a star athlete in high school. He's a leader in his community. Later, he coaches peewee football. When he becomes a private investigator, he opens his office in the neighborhood where he grew up so that kids can see a strong black man going to work every day.
Yeah, I'm going to take you by his house.
Yeah. Okay. These row houses look like they've been around for a while.
Yeah, this is real old Washington here.
Fictional Strange would have lived here when he was a boy with his mom and dad and brother. Families live here, but crime is high.
When I first started writing about this neighborhood, there was, you know, they would find dead bodies here in the morning. Kids would be walking to school and there'd be a dead body stashed here.
There are some strong parallels between real life and Pelicanos' fiction, says D.C. homicide detective Mitch Cradle.
All of our murders that we deal with are normally in the neighborhoods.
Detective Cradle has worked for D.C. police for 25 years. He says when Pelicanos writes the good guys and the bad guys in the same community, that's the real thing.
A lot of the criminal element is not necessarily from outside of those communities. For us as detectives, it's not hard for us to gather information in those communities because everyone knows who's committing them, opposed to being strangers. So I can see where George can really get a feel for what he's writing about because any and everything he needs is right there.
George Pelicanos does the kind of shoe leather work of a detective when he's working on a novel, walking the streets, talking to people, studying the history of a neighborhood. As we drive through D.C. together, he points out landmarks that he includes in his books. For his new novel, The Cut, he picked out exactly which house his protagonist, Spiro Lucas, would rob.
Because I cased it. I went back in the alley and I looked to see if you could break into a place in the middle of the day. And, I mean, I can even show you the house. And so all these things...
Bring your tools, too?
The tools are in the trunk.
When George Pelicanos talks about what it was like growing up in D.C., he describes himself as a bit of a greaser. He once drove a jacked-up Camaro and liked to go to bars and drink whiskey. But he also worked as a dishwasher and sold women's shoes. It's no wonder Pelicanos can move so easily through the different worlds that make up D.C. He says he's liked getting to know two other cities, Baltimore when he wrote for The Wire, and now New Orleans writing for Tremé. But he says his novels will always take place in D.C. His life's work is right here. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
This month, maintenance work is being performed on our AM580 antenna. It'll make our signal more reliable, especially during inclement weather. At times when the work is in progress, we'll need to reduce our power, and some of you